So the theme tonight is future glory, and I came to encourage you guys. And it's Isaiah 54. It's a passage, and I hope that I will not read all the chapter, but I'll read one verse, 54, verse 2. So if you can please turn your Bibles to Isaiah 54, 2. I'll read it in English and Romanian. To give you the context, it comes right after Isaiah 53, which is a pretty heavy chapter. It's intense. It tells you about the suffering of the Messiah. It tells you about the death. It tells you about the sin, my sin, our sin that put him on the cross, right? And it's heavy. And then chapter 54, we flip the page in the Romanian Bible, and it starts with rejoice, sau bucurate. In verse 2, it challenges us tonight. It says, enlarge the place of your tent. Stretch your tent curtains wide and do not hold back. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. Limba română spune, lărgește-ți locul cortului tău, întinde-ți învelitoarele locuinței tale și nu te opri. Lungește-ți funile și întărește-ți țărușii. Amin. I found out that I don't have to be too clever to preach. There's always 3 points in every time I look in every sermon. So this has 3 points, and I'll go with that model. The future glory of Israel. And if you read the whole chapter 54, it's very relevant how God speaks to a group that was once small, desolate, lost, left alone. And yet the Redeemer, its husband, her husband, I should say, comes back and makes a covenant, says, I will never be angry with you. I will never leave you alone. I was angry for a moment, but I'll never leave you alone. You are childless no longer. You will be so powerful and you reach out so far that you will dispose nations and your remnants, your people will go and flip nations upside down and you'll take over the desolate cities. And I thought about it. Israel, when I talk about Israel, when we talk about current day Israel, remember this was written before the time of Christ. It was always a unit, a country, an individual. And I know God's plan was not for that to be the only planet, a country that would know Christ, the Messiah, that would know God's plan. The salvation was for the whole world. And Israel never got it, and God was upset. But the promise is the future glory will encourage Israel, will motivate Israel to stretch out the curtains, to lengthen the cords, to strengthen those stakes. And in that we are grafted, that we would conquer, that we would win, that we would bring people over to God, that he would be ruler, as we sang, over the whole world. Israel hasn't had many great alliances, right? We had the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. We had the Germans mixing with others. We had the Americans. We have NATO. We have all sorts of crazy alliances over all of history. But look at Israel. It's always alone, desolate, childless. But God says, no, that's not the case. And we look at the church today, and tell me a place where the church is not present. Tell me a place where God hasn't grafted us in this root, which is Israel, and from it we have the Messiah, and through him we have the blessing for the world. And that's my call and the challenge to the church, to the youth, to everybody here present, that we would understand what our responsibility is in the world we live in. I won't get into politics, I'll stay in the word. I love what you were saying. hope and change. Right now it's a world of hopelessness, it's a world of darkness, it's a world where kids don't even know what's going on, they don't know what they're going to do in life. And I look at them and I said, kids, the best is yet to come. And they say, no, it's not. What do you mean the best is yet to come? It's pretty bad out there. Yeah, it is. There's a phrase that I always use in my emails and I use tonight. At one point, Jesus says to the church, you in the world, you will have trouble. But he says, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. It will be tough, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. În lume veți avea necazuri, spune. Dar îndrăzniți, în engleză, be of good cheer. Românește, îndrăzniți, fiți biruitori, că eu am biruit lumea. And I was thinking the other day, where it says that the church will not be defeated, do you know what it says? The church will not, the gates of hell will not defeat the church, right? And I thought, well, how do the gates come after me? Here I am and the gates whack me. No, the gates only can defeat you if you go against them, and then enemy on the other side is stronger than you, correct? But what that means is that the church cannot be lazy, cannot be inactive, cannot be careless, cannot be passive in its four walls, like the brother said. We are not just here, because if we are here, then we're not even going to attack the gates. We have no idea if they'll defeat us or not. But to have that challenge and to have that promise that the gates of hell will not defeat you, us, the church, then we have to go and attack. And we have to knock on the doors and bang on the doors and reach out, as it were, because we have that authority and that responsibility and that charge before Jesus comes back. And I'll show you from the word to go out after the lost and to grab those that are not yet into this tent. So this passage came to me throughout the summer, and I've preached it at weddings and everywhere I've been. I had this motto in my life: I'll never speak from the same passage twice. Prideful, youthful arrogance, huh? I'm getting older, huh? I told you. This passage, I've spoken to it more than any other passage in the last 5 months. And the reason is, I believe, because it's relevant. And it goes as follows. And it says, you know, it talks to us, it talks to the future of Israel, but it talks to individuals tonight. And it talks to you as a person. And I don't know what stage of life you're on, but, excuse me, stage of life you're in. But there is a moment when God says, enough is enough. What you have had, the pain, the problem, the insuccesses, the whatever the past was, take a deep breath. Now be of good cheer, and I'll go ahead and take over what I've called you to do. Go ahead and enlarge your place of tent. Go ahead and stretch out your curtains wide, and you may say, I'm happy where I'm at, Lord, thank you. Can't wait for you to come back. Speaking of the Lord coming back, Matthew 24 speaks of the Lord coming back, and the first so many verses, it gets into what's going to happen before and the signs, and many people love that. Personally, and this is just my personal take, I really like when it starts from verse 36 when it says, be careful, be watchful, be on the lookout for that moment. And it tells us what to practically do before he comes back. Now, many people spend their time figuring out when he comes back. I figure out it's kind of like a jar of jelly beans that the teacher puts on the desk and says, please guess how many jelly beans are in the jar. 1,250. Great. How about you? How about you? How about you? It's like, okay, but who cares, right? The point is not, that's not the point of the lesson. That's just a moment to attract your attention that there are jelly beans, that there's a number that the teacher knows, but you don't. And in this process of he and knows and you don't, or she knows and you don't, there's going to be some knowledge shared. And then the teacher goes into a lesson. It's just a moment of attention grabbing. So Jesus grabs our attention saying, yeah, we'll come back and there'll be signs and there'll be wonders and there'll be things that will happen. Look around, pay attention, be watchful. And then this is what you do while you wait for me to come back. No, you don't grab your luggage and you sit tight saying, I think it's tomorrow or the next month, or I know how many jelly beans are in the jar because I've counted them based on my numbers and my numerology, and I know exactly when he's coming back, and I am ready, and that's it. That would be almost like a selfish moment, right? And the Bible says in Matthew 24 and into Matthew 25, it tells us how to enlarge our tent, how to enlarge our sphere of influence. A tent is basically a abode, a place of shelter. It's the most basic of human needs. And the Bible speaks endlessly about bringing strangers into your house because you may not know when you entertain angels, right? Opening your door, feeding the Romanians, the poor, going out for the desolate, speak for the ones that can't speak for themselves. It's a high and mighty call. Have your tent stretch out and have your tent reach out and have your tent bigger than it was. And realize that under your influence, that tree that grows under with which all the birds of the air will come, right? That little seed that is like the kingdom, but that grows into a massive tree. Well, that's what I'm called to be, and that's what you're called to be. It's not enough just to be. We have to expand and we have to grow. And I'll tell you later why it's important to do this in a very ordinary fashion, and don't look at the extraordinary and the pizzazz. Forget the pizzazz, just the reality of growing and enlarging and letting your sphere of influence grow. So it says in Dimla Vigere, or Matthew 24:36, for that day and for that hour, nobody knows. The angels of heaven, the Son, only the Father. And what happened, I will read from it's in Romanian. I don't have it in English, I have it in Romanian. Ce s-a întâmplat în zilele 9 și continuă, dar spune felul următor de ce trebuie să facem până atunci. În versetul 44. De aceea și voi fiți gata, căci Fiul omului va veni în ceasul în care nu vă gândiți. Be watchful, you don't know when the Son will come back. But, verse 45. Care este deci robul credincios și înțelept pe care l-a pus stăpânul său peste ceata slugilor sale, în casa căruia sunt mulți, și i-a încredințat Domnul, să le dea hrana la vremea hotărâtă. Who's that good servant? Who's that faithful servant who the Lord put in charge of others, whose tent has an influence under which is which under the shadow or the authority of that, whatever, whether it's at work or at home, you have many that come and rest, right? And you feed them, and you take care of them, and you protect them. Ferice de robul acela pe care stăpânul său la venirea lui îl va găsi făcând așa. That person's blessed, doing what you're supposed to do when the master comes back. There will not be a test saying, let's see who got the closest my coming back. And you get the prize because you're the closest, and you're guessing. Okay, great. But there will be a test, or there will be a reward, I should say, for those that have done what they're supposed to do, the due diligence, during the time while they're waiting between now and then, whenever then is. It could be tomorrow, it could be in 100 years, right? Now, I'm not saying not to pay attention to the signs. The Bible is clear. Pay attention to the signs. Know what's going on. Verify it from scriptures, understand it, but don't live for that as a moment of the end. But while between now and then, be active and do your due diligence and let your tent go out, your influence, your ability to shelter others, to protect others. Get involved. I love what you guys are doing. 821, that's part of your tent enlarging a little bit, right? Emmanuel did not do this till now. Raising money for the poor in Romania, great. It's great. Continue. Enlarge your tent left and right. Make it taller if you want. Make it wider, right? And the idea of enlarging the tent, now if you're not married, it may simply mean, and I'm just going to joke for a second, if you're not married, you only have a certain amount of influence in your family. You want to have a whole another family to have influence over, or vice versa. Get married. All of a sudden, you have twice the amount of family, right? Your tent has now doubled. It's wonderful. We're celebrating 8 years this weekend, so during these 8 years, I can just say, thank God for the 8 years I have Caitlin. I have now family in Oregon that I did not have before, and she has family here she had never before. So enlarge your tent. It's godly. It's honorable. It's marriage is wonderful, and it's supposed to be wonderful. It's supposed to be that place of influence where you influence her family, and she influences yours, and vice versa. And you enlarge your tent. You say, in this tent, Christ will reign. And if it doesn't, you pray, because he should, and you will, in the family that doesn't know yet Christ, not yet know Christ. The second verse says, or the second part of the verse, enlarge your tent. And then it says, well, how about lengthen your cords? And I tell people and I tell myself, there are many things, many people and many influences I've had, but it's not enough. God asks us to lengthen our cords. Visit Romania if you haven't gone. Go to Hungary and enjoy that country. It's so, so beautiful. If you haven't gone and met a Hungarian out there, go. Lengthen your cords. Shake the hand of a person that you haven't before. There was a book that influenced me as a young man. It said, How to Make Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And it's a great book. What if the church was friendly and influencing the world, right? How to be friendly and influence the world. What if we reached out and shook hands with people that we don't usually reach out to? It's that extension of the hand, right? It's a lengthening of the cord. It's saying, our church has never worked with that church, but we will today, from now on. Our church has never worked with that community event, but we will. We have never had a, and I'm not preaching to you, I'm preaching to myself. I'm in the process of doing this, and it's pretty interesting. At school, we have a group called the Christians, the Cougars for Christ. Weird name, but that's our motto, Cougars for Christ. And the kids come, and I made it a motto. This is our motto for the year. And because we honor God by saying, this is our motto, we're going to lengthen our tents, stretch out our cords, deepen our stakes. God said, okay, I'll bring you people. I don't reach out. They come to us. And we have to be ready to say, I honor your word. And God says, let's see it. And then your tent will be reached out, right? You have to go a little further with your ropes, and then put those stakes a little bit deeper because you have to. There's more at stake now. Does that make sense? No pun intended. So lengthen your cords. Go out where you haven't gone. Shake the hands of people you haven't shaken. În limba română spune, lăgesezi locul cortului tău și nu te opri. Ni se cere să fim foarte neobosiți, sau cum să zic. Indiferent de oboseală, nu te opri. Continuă. Doamne, mulți am cunoscut. Mulți au adăpostit în casa mea. Să mai vină încă mai mulți. Doamne, la mulți am dat, mai dă-le. Doamne, mulți bani, multe, în continuă. Biblia spune, nu obosi în facerea binelui. Nu te opri. Doamne, nu mai pot. Okay, I can't do this anymore. And it says, well, strengthen your feeble hands and your tired hands and your feeble knees, right? It's a command. And then get going and start walking so that the path that you have in is straight. Others that will come in you will be healed. You're like, I'm not called to heal anybody. I'm not a minister. I don't put oil on people. I don't pray for people. But yes, you are, because when you have your hands are ready and your knees are strong and you walk straight, there's a ministry going on and people follow you and they're like getting healed because you walk normal. You do a normal, simple life. I'm not talking about the pizzazz, like I told you before. Just live a normal Christian life. Do your best. Be an influence. Be friendly and influence the world by just being godly, and people will follow and they'll be healed. And all of a sudden you're healing people. You're like, I didn't know this is my calling. And the answer is, of course it is. You're stretching out where you didn't before. You're doing things you didn't think you were responsible for. Lord, I'm responsible for healing people physically, mentally, yes. Emotionally, spiritually, yes, you are. I was with a friend not long ago. Bad shape. Suicidal, drunk, just in bad shape. Really bad. Dark place. And I simply said, let's get out of here. Whatever here is, let's just go somewhere. Where do you want to go? Anywhere. Okay, let's go. It's one of those lengthening of the cords I've never done with this person. I've known him for many years, about 30 years. Let's go. And in the process, he said, I lost my faith. I go, did you pray to God? What's the deal? He's like, I pray, I ask, I beseech him. He doesn't listen to me. He never helps me. I'm like, okay. I go, but just today I met a friend that out of the blue said, this person's in trouble. Do you know that? And I said, yeah, I do actually. So I went to the junkyard. I didn't have to go, but I went. It was a wreck yard actually. And I went to get some parts for my school. And I talked to the guy, a gentleman there, and some guy out of the blue says, hey, you are so-and-so's relative. I said, yeah, how do you know? Whatever, the connection was made. I didn't search for that connection. He says, do you know that that person's in trouble now? I said, yeah, I know. He's all, he's really in trouble now. I said, okay. So I took it as a godsend. Go talk to that person now and get him out of the house now. I did, and I told him, hey, but that's God sending that person in the junkyard. I didn't have to go to the junkyard. I was supposed to be somewhere else. I told my wife I'm at the junkyard. She's like, what are you doing there? We're supposed to be with our girl somewhere else. I said, well, I just went to the junkyard. I don't know why, but I met this cool guy that told me about this problem, and I'm going to take care of it tonight. She agreed. I took the guy out, and as I'm talking with him and saying, this person was sent by God. No, he wasn't. I asked God to send me help, and he doesn't. And I'm with him there in a hotel room far away. You ask God for help and he doesn't, huh? Okay. Hugged him, loved him. Maybe later he'll see that God loved him through me, right? I wasn't special. I was just a basic friend. Basic. G.K. Chesterton said, there's nothing more extraordinary than an ordinary family. An ordinary dad, an ordinary mom, ordinary kids. But that's become, and it is, extraordinary because that's divine. There's nothing more extraordinary than an ordinary friend. Somebody that just goes with you the extra mile and says, I'm just with you. I don't do much, but I'm here. Well, I pray to God it doesn't send me any signs and wonders. Okay, I'm here. With that said, I wasn't trying to toot my own horn. I was just saying, sometimes God talks to us to do something that we didn't want or to extend that cord. You don't have to look for it. You just have to say, Lord, I'm willing to go further, to extend my tent, to reach out my cords a little bit further. I'm ready. And then trust that God will give you that opportunity because he's responsible and he wants the whole world, right? He wants people. And finally, ultimul punct spune, întărește-ți țărușii. That doesn't mean make new ones. It just means the ones that you have, go deeper. Strengthen your stakes, right? If it's in there, because now you have a bigger tent, longer cord, strengthen them a little bit more. Yeah, spend more time with your wife if you're a minister. Strengthen that stake, right? That's the foundation of what holds your family and your ministry together. If you're in the church, show up more often at church. Strengthen that stake. It's there. Go twice a week, but go three times, right? I'm speaking to myself. I go, of the many times at our church that we meet, there's one that I always skip. It's Monday night. It's the most horrible time for prayer, but that's my worst day. It's the most tiring day at school, and I skip it, and God's challenging me. He says, well, go for that one too. Strengthen that stake a little more. Okay, Lord, I get it. So it's not asking us to make new, okay, it's asking us to stretch our tent, reach out with our cords further, but then whatever we have those stakes, whatever there are, just go deeper, a little bit deeper. Many times conversations, those of you that go to youth conventions know, it's just, hi, how are you? Great, how are you? I'm great, how are you? About after 500 people, you're like, everybody's great and everybody's doing fine. Why am I here? Nobody needs me. I don't need anybody really. We're doing great. And yet they're all broken, right? Every one of them. How do I know? I was one of them, right? This person I was with told me, you are so perfect. He goes, you intimidate me. What are you talking about? You know how many struggles I have? So I shared a couple, and he's like, really? Do you know what I'm going through? Do you know that I don't have it all put together? It could fall apart at any moment, but by God's grace, I'm put together and I'm held together by his spirit. Day by day, it's a struggle, and I'm saying, God, have mercy on me today. Do you know that? At the conventions, everybody's perfect, right? I'll tell you an experience. To my shame, but also to God's glory, there was a convention after many, 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 many conventions we've been at, and this happened to me in Sacramento, and we went with a group of guys, we're all not married at the time, and I said, after all the conventions, I put God first and people first, I'm tired, I need to get married. This is prior to meeting my wife, it was about a month before I met her. I'm tired of serving, right? Others, that tent, big tent, large, whatever, I forget, I need to make my own little tent and have my wife there, and this is it. I want to have my own, start from scratch and make it well. And I went with the wrong attitude, but that's okay because God can steer a moving truck, right, in the direction that he wants it to go. So I went to the convention. I didn't want to go at the convention for other purposes than, oh, I got to meet a wife. It's as basic as black and white, okay? I got to get married. I was 32. I got there late. Everybody that I usually talk to, all the friends, nobody really was interested in old friends, right? They're interested in new friends, and it was lonely. I was like, well, that's weird. Not only me, but all my guy friends were lonely. And we're at the hotel in our 30s. Doing pillow fights because we're just lonely. Like, if you guys know Fidu Tifra, Dani Tifra, those guys. Serious men, but we're just goofy. I said, okay, we'll try again tomorrow. Try again tomorrow. Nothing. Nobody talked. Nobody paid attention. It was like a futile. And as a man, when you get challenged and nobody pays attention to you, you're like, well, I'm going to make somebody pay attention to me. We ended up talking to anybody and everybody about anything and everything just to talk to people, girls. And I said, there's 1,000 people here. There's 500 girls on average, and about 5 that I may be interested in, and 1 that I need. The math is simple. I like numbers. Just 1. God, 1. And you know I've been serving you for many years. I was broken, right? I was with the wrong spirit in the wrong place. But I was there, and God could heal me. And after trying Saturday and our friends, and nobody was paying attention to us, finally Sunday night after Sunday, I forgot to tell you, it was the day of Pentecost. It happened to be that weekend. Coco, I love jazz. And I decided to go to the jazz festival downtown Sacramento. It was Pentecost Day. I'm a Pentecostal at a youth convention. I said, forget you guys. I'm going to go to the jazz festival. Maybe there, God, maybe. I was desperate. Actually, I wasn't looking for girls. I was just looking to relax and get put together before the evening service to finally meet the wife that I was hoping for, right? And I was like, in the middle of the jazz festival, which was beautiful. If you've ever been at that, it was everybody's playing on the boat. It's like old 1930s style. It was just good. And then we went to church, and within 10 minutes, the group that came up sang the song that just broke me down, just crumbled everything. And it says, break my heart for what breaks yours. 1,000 people, 500 that mattered, girls, of the 505 that I thought mattered, and 1 that I hope would matter, right? And God was saying, 1,000 people matter, yeah? 1,000 people matter, not 1, not 5, not 500, 1,000. And I broke down, I wept, and I texted Philo. This was T9 text at the time. Philo, we got to repent, man. In the middle of that song, he texts me back. We both look at each other. We wept, both of us. We're like, we're repenting. That song made us repent deeply because we were, for the wrong reasons, looking for one person when God was looking at 1,000, right? And we can easily be distracted, and that was my shameful story. To tell you the beautiful part of that, within a month, I went to Portland. And I met Caitlin, and the rest is history. Here we are 8 years later, married and happy. But it happened that it was the darkest time when I said, I can't even do this right. This, talking to people. I've done it so well for so many years. God says, no, you have not. And no, you will not. And no, you cannot. And no, I have nobody for you here. Because she wasn't there. Well, thanks, Lord. Where are you when I called? You know, like the guy that told me. I call a God and he sends no one. I'm like, Lord, thanks. And I go to Portland, and within no less than 4 weeks, I meet the person that will be my wife. The reason I share that with you, there's people all around us. And to us, this person may matter because we're trying to do a business deal. And God says, okay, it matters to you, but there's many people around him that matter to me, right? Or we're at a company and the boss matters because, well, we want to take his job eventually or whatever. And the janitor doesn't matter because, well, I'll never take his job. Why would I do his job, right? And God says, but he matters to me. And no job is big or small. It's just people that are doing what they're supposed to at the time that they're doing it. And then God says, open your eyes and enlarge your tent and maybe take those blinders off and say, just a little bit wider. Stretch those tentacles a little bit out, those, you know, the tent, the ropes. And then the people that you know, just go a little bit deeper with them and actually talk from heart to heart and pay attention to those that are hurting around you. And the secret is everybody's hurting, which is phenomenal. At the same time, is the most important thing, because if we know that, we have a way to talk with them about God and about the way that God wants to work. So looking, and I'll wrap it up here, looking at Matthew, I said, okay, great. Remember the good and faithful servant was the one that fed the people that God gave him under the authority. So if I have 1,000 people at a conference and I'm supposed to speak, or if I'm not supposed to speak, I'm supposed to be in the background. I forgot to tell you, that Sunday night, I went out, and there was a group of about 20 guys that looked well put together. One of them was the guy we met yesterday. I'll tell you later the name. He's married and happy. But at that point, he was lonely, and the other 20 guys were lonely. They're younger, and I was the old, experienced one. And I told him, guys, let me tell you a little bit. Because I go, you guys are lonely. Nobody's talking to you. Like, no, 20 guys. So I had him heart to heart saying, here's how God healed me of this nonsense. Let's have a good day tomorrow at the park. And I listened to them, and I hear them. I heard guys not cry, but share with me how they were rejected and how they're broken. Girls, you're like, shut up. This is so weak, right? But men are weak when it comes to that. When they're rejected at that age, they're just all over the place. They need help. So I talked with them, and I said, God cured me at the service. Let me help you get through this moment. And the reason I share that with you is watch how God asks. So feed the people that you're supposed to feed. I'm not talking about 1,000 at a conference. I'm talking about the 20 guys in the parking lot. That was my ministry that weekend. I wasn't preaching at that conference. Darn it. I don't know why. But I was speaking to those 20 guys, and I went there to get my heart broken so 20 guys would get helped. So Matthew 24 says, feed the people under your watch, children, grandchildren, the janitor you rub that's in your building, you rub shoulders with, you shake hands with. Feed them. Share with them. Stretch your tent out. Let them shelter under your wing a little bit. Lengthen the cords and strengthen the stakes a little bit. And then Matthew 25 goes into three parables that actually tell us the same thing in different ways. Pilla celor zece feciore, the 10 virgins. And it says, well, be watchful, be mindful, be diligent, get ready, get your lamps filled with oil. Laziness is not an option. You know that? I'm doing fine is not an option. I'm okay is not an option. This is great. I've arrived. This is not even an option. And it says, be active, be diligent, have your candles filled, because you never know when the groom will come back. The next one, it says the parable of the talents, or the bags of gold, 5 bags of gold, 2 bags of gold, 1 bag of gold. And who do you think was called good and faithful servant? The one that relaxed, or the one that went out and invested and took the risk to say, I'm going to talk to that person. I will reach out and talk to the janitor. I'll reach out and the CEO of this company will be my friend, period. I don't care what they say. 5 bags of gold, you make 5 more, and God says, wow, keep them all, and we'll give you even more because you're faithful. And then the one that has 1 says, Lord, I was shy. I'm introvert by nature. I'm shy, Lord. I have an excuse. I was born this way. And he says, no, you were not. You're called, you're born again to lead my way, to do my way, right? Lord, I don't have a personality that conduces to talking to people. Do it anyway. Andraznits. Be of good cheer. Be friendly and influence the world. That's your charge. It's not just something you choose to do or not to do. It's our responsibility. Go out and win. The kingdom has to expand. The money has to be invested. The talents have to be put to use. The one that doesn't do anything, it's very shameful the way he's called. Lazy servant, tricky servant, right? Get out of here. Like, he gets punished for being that. And then finally wraps up with, I love this when I was a kid. There's a judgment seat, and there's a sheep, and there's the goats. That's it. And do you know what the parable, or rather this description tells us, what's going to be the distinguishing factor? It's that stretching of the tent. It's that reaching of the cords. It's that deepening of the stakes. I was hungry and you visited me. Wow. Not too spiritual, is it? I mean, you fed me. Not too spiritual, is it? I was in prison and you visited me. When? Only time you visit anybody in prison, by the way, you're visiting me. Lord, I didn't even know about it, right? I was desolate. I was out. I was about. I wasn't where I was supposed to be in life. And you reached your tent out. And you reached your stakes out. And you talk to that kid when nobody else will talk with them. You paid attention to that individual that nobody else paid attention to. Or you paid attention to the one that everybody pays attention to. And you go a little bit deeper. And you say, everybody pays attention to you because you're the CEO. But there's more than that, right? You go a little bit deeper with your stake. There's a relationship. Go deeper. And anytime we do this for the namesake of the Lord, every time we're active in our duties, anytime we're responsible in our ministry, and it starts right here. It starts in our town. It starts in this church. It starts with the people that are in our family. And then it goes out. And it goes out to the ends of the world. That's the ministry. Anytime we do that, we're actually doing what Isaiah 54 says. The future glory starts with the current responsibilities being put to action. Let me repeat that. The future glory that we'll have starts with the current responsibilities of what we do today, tomorrow. Forget bean counting, right? Or jelly bean counting, that is in the example. Start reaching for people. And you know the kingdom will come faster then. You know that God will be honored in your life then. You know that you will do God's will. And when he comes back, he says, good and faithful servant. You fed the people. You had oil in your lamp. You took care of the investment that I made in you. You invested it further. And you fed and you visited and you came and you clothed. And you're like, Lord, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just living ordinary life. And he says, exactly. That's the point. Live an ordinary life and let God do the extraordinary, because it's not you anyways. Amen. Just live a friendly life. Just live a life of influence in the sense that I just want to be there for that person or those people or that company, right? I told Kaylin, I have lived many years in my profession. I wanted to influence people, kids. And God just said, well, how about you influence your profession? I'm like, how do I do that? How do I influence my profession, you know? Maybe God is calling some of us, you're not people. Okay, whatever. But God is calling you to influence your company or the way the plan is written or the way your business is run or the way you just draw those straight paths. Everybody knows how to walk. Let's just walk tirelessly, right? Straight. Just walk straight. And God says that people will watch and they're broken and they're by the wayside, and when they follow you, they will be healed. That's powerful. That's simple. That's what we can do every day. That's what we should do every day. That's where the future glory of Israel, of the church, of me and you, that's where it starts. It starts how I walk. how I talk, how I reach out my hand, how I do ministry here, not just overseas. I haven't gone overseas this year, but overseas for missions. I've just gone overseas with the family. And I took a break after many, many years, and I didn't feel guilty at all. Because it's not about a dutiful thing where somebody's watching and somebody's keeping points. Nobody's keeping points. It's you and God. And the time came when I took a break, and it was fine. But I met a guy at the airport. I came back from Africa after 6 months. This guy would not shut up. He would talk to everybody. Not only was he American, which makes him very friendly, but he was a young American, and he had a big smile, and he shook everybody's hands, and they thought he was crazy. It was in Germany. Maybe he was crazy. Maybe he came from a different planet, but he just came from Africa, where he barely talked to people because he was isolated, to a world of random folks from all over the world in the busy terminal in Germany. And he just reached his hand out to everybody, including me. And he encouraged everybody, and he talked to them, and I said, this guy is doing it right. We are so isolated. We are so lonely. People are so hopeless. People are so dreary. And when you ask him, how did you get here? You used to be a fun person. Life, responsibilities, right? That's what the person that's in trouble told me. I haven't done fun things in a long time, like fishing. Why not? So going fishing may be a spiritual activity for that guy, because in that time when I fish, I can talk with them. Like Jesus fished, right? Did you catch any fish? No. Oh, okay. How about you take the net on the other side? Okay, Lord. Yeah, you know how to fish, right? But at your beck and call, we will. How about you just listen to the Lord, right? When he tells you to talk to somebody. How about you try this? It doesn't work, Lord. I tried it with this person. But try it anyways. Pulled out 153 big fish, right? The tent got larger. The ropes went out further. The stakes went deeper. And God was honored. So I challenge you, I challenge myself. I only speak to you because I have to hear this message myself again. Let's be busy. There's no time for hopelessness. It's all about hope, right? We are not yet what we're supposed to be. The best is yet to come, and we're responsible for God's kingdom advancing here in Southern California, not somewhere else. And if we go somewhere else, then we're responsible at that point. But for sure, we're responsible where we're at. And where God has put us, it's the best place to be now. So I urge this church to be very active, as you have been, but continue to be more active in different and creative ways. Invest that money. Invest those talents. Reach out. Shake the hands. Influence the people. Influence professions. Be the head and not the tail, you know, like Israel was promised. And I know that God will do his work. Be ordinary in a very crazy world, and that will be the most extraordinary thing you can be. Let me rephrase that. It's my last statement. Just be God's ordinary servants. Be humble and serve the Lord, right? Day in and day out. And that's the most extraordinary thing some people will see. That's the miracle of God that they have been watching for. And when they come and turn, they will heal because you have walked the straight and narrow. May God help us. Amen.